Washington leading that series 3-1 over Vegas. Game 5 will be Thursday night. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service on this Wednesday, June 6th, the 74th anniversary of the D-Day invasion. Should be a sunny and seasonal day here in southeastern Wisconsin. A high of 73 inland, cooler near Lake Michigan. Overnight, 58 degrees. Another lovely day for Thursday, partly sunny. Tomorrow's high, 76 inland, cooler near Lake Michigan. New numbers are in. Wind from the southeast at 4. 57 degrees in Kenosha, 55 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for the morning show comes from UW Parkside, now offering the Sports Management Master's Degree Program. Students learn the business skills necessary to succeed in today's competitive sports environment. Flexible degrees for in-demand careers. More at uwp.edu. Support for WGTD also comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. Newly reimagined for 2018, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. JackAndrea.com. And support for the morning show also comes from Carthage College's Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses designed for the working adult. More information online at carthage.edu/grad.
And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD HD. I'm Gregory Berg. It's always a pleasure to welcome from across the hall, from his offices there, the president of Gateway Technical College, Brian Albrecht, to pay his monthly visit to the program. President Albrecht, great to have you back.
Thank you, Greg. It's always a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And we have quite a distinguished guest whom we'll be introducing in just a few moments, namely the Honorable Mayor of Racine, Corey Mason. And so we'll get to Mr. Mason in just a moment. First, there are some gateway items we want to make sure that we get through, including a wonderful award that Gateway was recently given, the Green Ribbon Award for Sustainability, a really important concept here at Gateway, a very important guiding principle.
Absolutely. You know, I would like to think that for the 100 years that we've been in service, we've been focused on the environment and sustainability. But really, in the last 10 years or so, we've heightened our awareness and our sense of responsibility, signing on to the President's climate commitment, every year providing an annual report to our community around our carbon footprint and how we're reducing that, trying to get more engaged in rideshare programs and helping to assure that our students are fully aware of their sense of responsibility, not only the great technical skills, but then how do you develop that sense of responsibility with those skills within our community. And so what an honor it was when I received the letter from the U.S. Department of Education that Gateway was selected as our state's recipient for the Green Ribbon Award, acknowledging all of their work in sustainability. And I just have to thank Stephanie Skilba and the entire team that works so diligently on making sure that our programs are responsive and that the campuses not only demonstrate responsibility through new technologies, including wind, solar, geothermal, but really helping to engage a sense of ownership by all of our faculty, staff, and students in their social responsibility to protect our environment. So a big shout out and congratulations to all of the Gateway team members that are now Green Ribbon Award winners.
That's fantastic. You know, someday, Mr. President, that would be a great topic for one of our morning show conversations, to just talk about all of the different ways in which Gateway has really striven to be as green a campus as possible. And of course, that's an ongoing challenge. I mean, once you're green, staying green and becoming even more green becomes a really interesting and wonderful challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point. I'll make a note of that and put it on a program, because you're right, whether it's going for LEED certification in our building programs, every time we remodel a building, we take a look at all of the recyclable materials. And of course, we have the Center for Sustainable Living, which is a home on the Kenosha campus that we've essentially taken off the grid with solar, wind, and geo. And it's free for all elementary school kids to explore new technologies. to the programming, you know, our new HVAC program around building automation systems. And there's so many elements to becoming a more social responsible campus, because we, you know, we cover 1 million square feet of training space, so we can save money by putting in more energy efficient lighting systems in and controlling our spaces when they're not being utilized to cool them differently, and really, you know, do a better job of scheduling and offering programs for students so that we're not commuting as much as we were in the past. And it's a big responsibility just because of the size and scope of the Gateway campuses, you know, Walworth County, Racine, and Kenosha. But if you don't start somewhere, you're never going to make a dent in this issue, right? So,
right.
You know, our water programs, our wind programs, our air quality programs, all of those are essentials to great jobs and to the social responsibility that we have as a campus.
Sure. And, of course, what a great example you are to the community and, for that matter, to every individual person who comes to Gateway. I mean, they are bound to see one way or another some of the ways in which Gateway is being green.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. You know, like, so for Earth Day, a couple thousand people come onto campus, and we have lots of workshops and demonstrations, and the Arboretum is open, so we have a lot of impact opportunities for our students to work within the community. Community gardens are a big part of our work here, and, you know, there's just a lot of educational opportunities to help not only demonstrate through our facilities, which we call living and learning laboratories, to the classes and programs that we run in the community for our citizens.
Fantastic. A couple other things I know you want to talk about, including the fact that this is graduation season, and most of the big area high schools have just had or about to have their graduations. And, of course, for Gateway, we have an increasingly impressive relationship with lots and lots of high school students.
Well, absolutely. You know, I get excited because of the Gateway graduation, which we held a few weeks ago already, because we're on a 3-semester calendar, which is a little different than some of the high schools. But I could not be more proud of the work of the high schools this year in helping build college and career success models and pathways for high school students. In fact, this year alone, we served 6,144 high school students with dual credit, which means they take Gateway College courses while they're in high school. They don't have to pay tuition, so we save families about $2.5 million in tuition costs. Their students graduate from high school last week or this week with multiple college credits. Lakeview just graduated last week, and I think, you know, over 20 college credits for each student when they graduated. Westosha graduated this weekend, and, you know, you can go down the list, whether it's the great academies in Racine or the partnerships in Burlington, where we have facilities right on their high school campuses, to the unique opportunities in which students are taking courses on campus, driving to our campus, or we're deploying faculty to their high schools to offer those courses. All of it's important, and I want to thank all of our schools, because they allow high school teachers to become certified at the tech college level and shared professional development, which is so essential to our work. And then, of course, to congratulate all those high school students that are taking college-level courses while they're in high school. Great credit to them, focused career path, and we welcome them to campus now and be able to help celebrate their college journey and make it more economical and maybe even shorter for them because they've completed a semester while they're in high school.
A little head start.
Right.
In addition, of course, to all these school partners and partnerships, I know you're excited about some new economic partners that Gateway has.
Absolutely. Every week that I'm on campus, I'm trying to think of new ways to expand our services. And we just finished up a great partnership meeting over at Niagara Bottling. And Niagara Bottling does high-speed automation. It's really remarkable. They partner with Crohn's Corporation. Gateway's had a training program in partnership with Crohn's for many years, and now it's expanded into Niagara Bottling. And it will enhance our mechatronics, our Industry 4.0, all the things that we know are here and will be stronger for us in the future. But our new partnership with BRP, we're going to have the High Performance Engine Program, E-Tech Engines, down on the Racine campus. So what a great venue for that. We'll open the big garage door, and we'll be working on boat motors and four-wheelers and jet skis, and we'll see Lake Michigan right in front of us. And extended partnerships with Andes as we open our third cosmetology center downtown Burlington in partnership with Andes. And we've got great new companies moving into our area to help us. Kubota is another great one, and Engines, they'll be a part of the Horizon Center project. And 3M is coming this summer to help us with personal safety training for our students. So we will continue to grow and expand, finding new opportunities for great jobs and great training for our students. So big shout out to all of our staff that work hard to build those relationships, because as we all know, these things don't happen by themselves. It takes a lot of effort to build those connections.
Two more quick items. One of them is a transportation summit that you participated in last week. What was that about?
Well, and I hope we have a chance to talk with the mayor a little bit about that. Nothing more important. We've got all these things that I announced, great partnerships and all over the region, but if we can't get people to the sites, it makes it difficult for them to take educational programs. So there was a big meeting held in Milwaukee, and I was honored to be able to speak and represent higher education, so two-year colleges and our four-year university partners, and talk about the impact that access to higher education can have as we try to, you know, uplift all citizens by giving them some sort of credential or degree. It's a part of our 60 Forward initiative, which means 60% of adults in the state of Wisconsin will have some sort of post-secondary degree by the year 2027, and it just helps to create a greater conversation around the needs of how do we bring, whether it's residents in Milwaukee to Racine or to Kenosha to work for great companies like Amazon or Foxconn, or it's our students getting access to new programming and job offers in the Franklin or Oak Creek areas. How do we make sure that there's mobility between the region?
That is so important.
That's very important.
Finally, I know you want to thank some people who were instrumental in the recent golf outing on behalf of the Gateway Foundation.
Well, let me first start by thanking Vicki Hallbeck and her team, because this year they took last place, which means my team did not take last place.
How nice.
I'm hoping she's listening to the program today, but I'll make sure she gets a copy of the tape here. But just a big thank you to the entire foundation board of directors who sponsor this event every year and all of the participants. They come from throughout the entire three-county region. Great sponsors. It was a beautiful day. We were at Hawksview. All of that money that's raised goes towards student scholarships. Every penny of it is put back in the hands of our students through tuition scholarships. And it's one way that our community can give back and have a really great time doing it. So it's a celebration. And I hope our listeners have a chance to, you know, Google a little bit the Gateway website and take a look at how they too can support our foundation and our students.
Fantastic. Well, we have a very special guest, of course, joining us today. So tell us about the invitation that you extended to Corey Mason.
Well, Mayor Mason and I have been friends for many years. When he was in the state legislature, I mean, he was my go-to person to help figure out how we're going to work new ideas through the legislature. And so when he announced that he was running for mayor, I mean, I was really excited because I you know, Racine just needs that level of leadership, the experience that he brings to our community. He has a vision for what we want in the future of this city, but also, you know, the political wherewithal for how do you get things done, whether it's in Madison, Washington, or right here in our home community. And so we were visiting just about 2 or 3 weeks ago on some issues on how do we develop more access downtown Racine and what role Gateway can play. And I said, we ought to talk about this to our community on our radio program. So I'm really, really glad he said yes. And he's here today to kind of share a little bit of his background and really get us all thinking about this collaborative effort on how the government entities can be working with the educational partnerships and, of course, our private sectors as well. So I welcome Corey Mason.
It's great to have you here, Mr. Mayor. Always great.
Thrilled to be here. Thanks.
Well, I don't know if you're thrilled at 7:45 in the morning, but be that as it may, we're thrilled for sure. Thank you for making time and
my
pleasure. I know is a very busy schedule for you. Ahead of us talking about some of the political matters of the day, I think some of our listeners who maybe don't know your own personal story would be interested to know, in a sense, where you come from and kind of
sure.
life's path that took you all the way to the mayor's chair.
Yeah, born and raised in Racine, fifth generation, graduated of Case High School, and went to UW-Madison, where I got a degree in philosophy, and then spent, you know, a good bit of time totally by accident in terms of how I got involved in politics. There was a recall election over the Brewers Stadium in 1996.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was home between, I think, my sophomore and junior year in college, and I thought, well, you know, I should go volunteer on this thing. And next thing I knew, I got a job in the state Senate working in the Capitol. So I was finishing my degree part-time, you know, and working full-time at the state Capitol, and really enjoyed that time. And so it was just a complete happenstance. But, you know, I have parents that are still very active in the community. I live here in town with my wife, Rebecca, who's a lawyer and the municipal judge for Racine, and our three children, Eleanor, Amelia, and Corey, who are 9, 7, and 6 years old, who attend fine arts school. So that's me and my family in a nutshell.
I think it's just remarkable. I mean, the type of commitment to the community, fifth generation and a leadership role throughout many of those generations. And I'm so impressed. Rebecca serves on our United Way board with us, very active in the community. I know your dad really well. He's working on the IT initiatives that we have in downtown Racine to try to help bring people into the educational realm so that they can get better skills. And he's been a strong advocate for us as well on the United Way board. So community development, and we'll talk a little bit later about your mom's investment in our community. And it's just been a remarkable experience for me to see your entire family's commitment to a downtown, better Racine. And I didn't know the philosophy degree, so now when somebody asks me, what can I do with a philosophy degree, I'm going to say you can become the mayor.
That's exactly right.
Actually, I wanted to ask you, what, if anything, prompted you to pursue that as your academic study? Anything in particular?
Oh, that's a great question. At Case High School, they actually have an intro to epistemology class that they do as part of the IB program called Theory of Knowledge. Tammy Hayward was my history and theory of knowledge teacher for that, and I loved it. I mean, I just really, you know, reading Aristotle in high school and talking about the nature of things. And, you know, you get a little cynical when you're 18 years old about kind of how things are. But, you know, to be challenged with, hey, you can actually, you know, get some answers about things. Now, I don't know that I got any good answers, but I did learn how to ask a lot of questions with that philosophy degree. So it's it served me well throughout my career.
Did you go back to the high schools at all? Did you get a chance to talk to kids today about these things?
I was just at Case talking to their IB students, and they were looking at doing a survey project and talking a little bit about it. But yeah, I mean, look, if I'm any benefit to the community as a leader, it's in no small part to the public education I got at Racine Unified Schools. I just had tremendous opportunities there, and it served me very, very well.
Fantastic. I think about the ways in which the city of Racine has grown tremendously and undergone a lot of dramatic change over the course of just the years that you've been alive, but even through the course of your family's life in Racine collectively, to now this point where you are the mayor. How would you chart where Racine has been over the last several decades? What sort of a journey has that been? Has it been downward, upward, all over the place? And what are your visions for where Racine goes from here under your leadership?
It's a great question. I mean, first, I'll start by saying I'm biased, obviously, but I think Racine's the greatest city on earth. I mean, I think it's just this fantastic place that has this great story of immigrants coming from all over the world, really, and striking out to invent things, to innovate, to build things. And we really just have a tremendous legacy in our community of having that kind of innovation and that sort of welcoming environment where people could come from all over the world and immigrate to Racine, Wisconsin, and learn how to build things. And, you know, that cross reference of knowledge that they received. It's also the home of the first technical college in the state of Wisconsin,
right.
An important part of our history. But it's a place where people can show up, work hard, and thrive, right? And so we were a manufacturing juggernaut, much like Kenosha, for most of the 20th century. And we've gone through a little bit of transition as the manufacturing sector has begun to automate and go through changes. But it's still our biggest employment sector. It's still where most people go to work every day, is in the manufacturing sector. And so that's sort of where we are. But what we really have is great people with a diverse community and people who, if given the opportunity and the skills, they roll up their sleeves, they get to work, they innovate, they learn, and, you know, like everywhere else, they just want to provide for their family and have a shot at the American dream. And we've still got a lot of opportunity to do that right in Racine.
Hmm. Well, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I remember in the 1980s when Racine, at that time, Racine Unified School District was recognized as the national leader in technical education and received a lot of recognition for that. And now back with the academy model, same thing's happening. A lot of national recognition for the types of programming that's being offered to allow access to education and get the types of jobs that are going to meet the new and emerging types of careers that the mayor's talking about. So transition is important for any community, and leadership to help guide that transition is absolutely essential. And you know, no matter where you go in Racine, people are just extremely proud of their city. And how do you elevate that confidence now into economic prosperity? And I think that's what leadership in the mayor's office is bringing.
Hmm. For those of you just joining us, this is the monthly visit of Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College, to the morning show. And he has invited to join him on this special edition of the mayor of Racine, the Honorable Corey Mason. And so we're having a conversation about Racine and about Gateway's place within the city of Racine and, of course, right here within southeastern Wisconsin. Mr. Mayor, I think a lot of our listeners would benefit from maybe having an explanation of how city governance works in Racine specifically. For instance, your relationship to the city council and the various departments that kind of make everything go. How's it all put together, and what is your role in the center of all that?
Sure. So we have a very great city council that I get to partner with on all these items. So the mayor is there are some communities that have what's called a city manager form of government, where the mayor is sort of somebody who might chair the council and cut a few ribbons here and there, but really you have a city manager that runs the day-to-day operation. Then there's a stronger mayor system like the city of Kenosha and the city of Racine have, where it's really the mayor that's designated as essentially the CEO, as it says in the statute, of the city. And so you're called to direct the operations of all the departments, and that's everything from public works to the water utility to the transit system to the parks and everything in between, but then also working with council to create and pass a budget. So any policy changes you want to make, you need to do with council, and certainly having a collaboration with council to move forward on any of these big projects is really very important.
Hmm. When you come aboard as mayor, are you essentially charged with working with everybody who is already in place?
Yeah, so I mean, we have a very strong and robust civil service system in the city of Racine. So we're fortunate to have people who are really expert in their field, who have decades of experience. You know, I'm just thinking about, you know, there's a lot of issues coming around water and wastewater. And, you know, we have a utility director in Keith Haas who's just been there for decades, who had to school me up very, very quickly once I came on board about how these water agreements work with our neighbors. You can't do that without having that sort of longevity of civil servants who are really dedicated to their tasks. He's just one of them. Dr. Julie Kinzelman's another one who's done enormous work with the health department to restore our beaches and, you know, look at environmental health in a robust way. So I could go on and on with these great city employees that we have that have really enhanced the quality of life in the community. So I get the benefit of that. And so it's a simultaneous thing where you need to be the new mayor and lead, but you also need to show respect and really learn as much as you can from some really smart people who've been serving the city well as stewards of their various departments.
Right. Lead and learn.
Absolutely.
And I can't imagine just the diverse of the different topics that you need to be aware of and in some ways fairly fluent in, because you could get asked at any time for your comment on whether it's water, air, parks, whatever it might be. And that's a full-time responsibility, just learning about the city.
It is. It's been just a little over 7 months since I've been in office, and so it's been quite a learning curve. But you have to do it out of necessity, right? I mean, this stuff comes up, and so you learn quickly. I will say my experience as a legislator has served me well in that role, because as a legislator, you're called to do very similar things. It's like, okay, we're going to vote on this today. What do you know about this topic?
Right.
And so you have to learn to school up on these topics quickly. But we really do benefit as a city from a strong and robust system of civil servants who've served the community well. And it's a bit of a tension. You know, sometimes the council might want to go one direction. Sometimes staff might make a different recommendation. You know, you have these council meetings and we talk about these things. It's how democracy works. But we're lucky to really have both, right? An elected leadership that responds to the needs of the constituents, but also really smart professionals who are there to maybe warn you from time to time when you suggest something. It's like, maybe you want to think about that one more time before you go down that road. So it's helpful to have that kind of dynamic in City Hall.
And is the matter of authority laid out very clearly in terms of this decision is up to the mayor and this decision is up to the city council?
Yeah.
Is that clearly delineated?
It is. We have a number of, we have the city council. We also have a redevelopment authority. We have a number of committees. One of the things I'm actually trying to do is reduce the number of city committees. We have more committees than Congress. I'm trying to streamline things just a little bit there. So trying to make some changes there. But yeah, it's pretty clear that, on the day-to-day operations, the mayor has a very clear role on big policy changes, on setting the budget. If you want to change direction on how you're going to do things, that's really an ongoing discussion with city council.
Of course, you, like Mayor Antaramian here in Kenosha, come to the position of the office of mayor with all of this legislative experience behind you. I mean, you have been in Madison many, many years, and so you really have a rich understanding and that of how things work in Madison, and that
right.
is so important. Beyond that, what is sort of the difference in sort of focus and philosophy if you are the mayor of Racine versus a state legislator? Sure. What's the difference?
It's way more work to be mayor. I've been very much humbled. I mean, it's the greatest job I've ever had, but it is, with all the changes coming to the area and it being a new role for me, it is challenging every bit of my faculties and experience to really do the very best for the city of Racine. So I wake up every day excited to do that, but know that I'm going to get challenged in some way or another to do something, to challenge people to think differently about things, but also have to learn a few things as I'm doing that. There's that phrase, the city never sleeps. There is this thing where, whether it's around a law enforcement issue or if there's a snowstorm, things that when I was a legislator, if there's a snowstorm, my head was on the pillow like everybody else. But when you're the mayor, suddenly you look at snowstorms much differently, right? You think about public safety in a much different way when you're the mayor. But it really, it is a very big job that, people said, you're home now, you must see your family more. The truth is I see my family a lot less now as mayor than I did when I was in legislator, even though I was gone half the week. So it is a big job. So that's the big difference. And the legislature, the legislature is now adjourned until January, right? So legislators still go up there and they do work, but there's not a legislative calendar. City council meets every 2 weeks. And, it has to, right? There's things that are going, if you don't do the work of approving the road projects now, they're not going to get paved this summer, right? So there's just the work always continues. And so that the pace of it with all the change coming and the new role has been really humbling.
Mm. And I would think a sense of so you get to see your work in action. So state policy in Madison, that's all great, but it's implemented at the local level.
That's right.
And at the local level, you get to actually see those roads being built, and you can see the families that you're helping by putting new policy changes in place.
No, I remember very early on doing a budget hearing when I was still in the legislature before I had taken office on the state budget, and Representative Barca and Senator Wirch and I did this hearing, and it was a very 30,000-foot, view of what's school policy going to be like. And then I went to an aldermanic town hall meeting, and it was about garbage pickup and the state of the alley and, what was going to happen in this neighborhood to fix it up. Local government is closest to the people. It's where it really touches their lives directly, right? And so and that is both challenging but also really rewarding, right? If you can solve somebody's problem on the ground and they feel like, okay, well, government responded, this was great. That's really what we strive for.
It's interesting as you describe it because, on the one hand, being in the state legislature suggests sort of a broader view of all kinds of things. And, you're looking at the whole state, even though you're representing, of course, your own constituents to a large degree. But thinking about things in a sense with the broad canvas of this whole state, and in the sense when one becomes the mayor of Racine, there's this sense of focus on just this city, except just this city is teeming with all kinds of activity and issues and challenges, and they are all suddenly on your plate. So it's in a sense it's a focus, but it's broad in scope as well. Overwhelming.
The real benefit of my legislative experience is it lets me draw from that knowledge base to try to bring more resources to the city of Racine. Right? Obviously, longstanding relationship with the technical college and system and Gateway. I know what an asset it is for the city of Racine and the people it serves, and so I want to enhance that. I know what a great resource the UW system is for the state. I want to figure out how to enhance those resources in the city. And also just knowing, where different grant programs are or different things that are available that I know other communities get, just sort of knowing that at the front end is actually very, very helpful to try to direct those resources into the city. So it's a lot to learn and it's a lot to do. There's never a dull moment, but boy, what an exciting time to be mayor.
Of course, one of the most exciting aspects of being mayor right now here in Racine and part of southeastern Wisconsin is all of the economic development that is already underway. The shifts bring, of course, sometimes a little bit of pain and displacement, but overall it seems to be a movement in a very, very positive direction, and particularly with the entrance of Foxconn into the scene, which at least in many respects is seen as an economic boon for the region. Where do you see all of this going? And is it all, in a sense, entirely positive? Or are there sectors of the economy where there are still points of struggle that we have to be
sure. I mean, like anything else, challenges and opportunities, but immense opportunities here, no doubt. So we are, you know, right next. The city limits, I think, are 3.5 miles from where Foxconn's facility is going to be. Right, so we're the closest city to where they're coming into play. And so if you don't sort of seize that opportunity, boy, you are missing a once in a lifetime opportunity. For sure, there are challenges, no doubt. You know, Racine has struggled with unemployment and underemployment for a long time. So it's great that there's a lot of jobs coming near to where we are. But we talked about this a little bit ahead of time. But if we don't figure out some of our transportation issues and some of our job training issues to get people in the city skilled up to be able to do the work that's coming to the area, you know, then the jobs might as well be 500 miles away. So so we really have to seize the opportunity. But the interesting thing about Foxconn's arrival on the scene is it's forcing a number of great conversations that, frankly, should have happened a long time ago. Mm. What are we doing about regional transportation to move people to the jobs that are coming to the area? What are we doing to collaborate with different communities to save costs and be more efficient and respond to constituent services? What are we doing to make sure that we have the higher education resources that we need to be a 21st century economy in the city of Racine? Those are the conversations we've been having for a while, but with such a big economic presence coming to the area, it's forcing these conversations to occur. So, you know, again, there's no magic wands that come with this arrival. It's hard work. We've got to figure it out. But it's really become a catalyst for a number of conversations that are really requiring us to figure it out.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, you think about in the early 1900s what happened to Racine, and today we kind of have these anchors, right, that are just been so positive for us. Great companies like Case New Holland or SC Johnson, you know, Modine, Twin Disc, and they still maintain outstanding family-supporting jobs. But, you know, maybe we take things for granted, and so this shines a new light, a new catalyst. Foxconn comes in with different levels of responsibility and energy that go around it, and we get to reinvent ourselves again.
Right.
And Corey and I were just visiting before the program actually about sort of the globalization of how quickly people are thinking about Racine again. So whether it's a partnership in Taipei, which Gateway's looking at student exchange programs, or, you know, smart cities in countries like Singapore and all over the world, people are starting to pay attention to us again like they did in the 1900s when they were looking for our tractors. And they still do that, but we don't have it on the front page of the paper. This helps to bring it back to light for us.
It does. It's such an exciting opportunity. I mean, now there are concerns, right? I mean, there's certainly been a number of conversations about what will this mean for Lake Michigan and water, and what are we going to do there? And as, you know, the city that runs the water and wastewater utilities, we're charged with an extra regional responsibility to make sure that we're protecting Lake Michigan. And certainly, as mayor, it's my charge to ensure that that's the case. But again, those are all, I view them as much as opportunities as anything else. You know, so we've got a challenge. Let's figure it out and make sure that we're bringing jobs to the area and protecting the environment at the same time. I think too often people break that down as though those are mutually exclusive things. Well, you have to pick one or the other. But if we're smart about it and we work hard about it and we're committed to it and transparent about it, we can do both, and we should.
Since you mentioned water, let's just talk about that for a moment, and maybe you can just sort of, to whatever extent you can, kind of take us inside those conversations that are happening right now around this really, really important issue. I mean, particularly for you as mayor, what role are you playing in these conversations?
Sure. So in terms of the biggest thing that people are talking about with water right now is this application for a diversion from the Great Lakes Compact to allow all of Mount Pleasant to be served by Great Lakes water. Right now, something like 95% of Mount Pleasant is in the Great Lakes Basin, but there's a corner of Mount Pleasant that's in the Mississippi Basin by KR and 94 there, and that's part of where the Foxconn campus is going to be. So this was a decision made before I took office, but the city did decide to approve an application to allow the city of Racine's water utility and wastewater utility to serve that additional area. And this is really a question around water quantity, right? And so a lot of people are looking at, well, it's 7 million gallons a day. What would that be? And 7 million is a big number, right? So if you don't have a context for it, it's sort of like, well, what is that going to do to Lake Michigan? Is it going to dry it up in a year? What would happen? But just to put it in context for us, our water consumption in the city of Racine is about 50% less of where it was at the height of our industrial heyday. So, you know, another 7 million gallons a day wouldn't even put us close to where we were at the height of the 80s. And just to put it into another context for people who are worried about the water quantity, the Chicago River takes out 2.1 billion gallons of water every day, right? So we're talking about another 7 million gallons on top of the tens of millions that the city of Racine uses for its utility now. So from a water quantity standpoint, I'm really not concerned. There's no doubt Lake Michigan can sustain that kind of use. The big question that people are understandably and rightly asking about is, yeah, but what's going to come back to Lake Michigan once Foxconn gets going? What is that going to look like?
And so, what is that water going to look like?
Right, yeah. Right. And so, you know, so this part's really important for people to understand. So they are required to follow all the same rules for water discharge as the 40 industrial users that the city of Racine already has. So they're going to have to, like the other 40 plus users that we have, they have to pre-treat the water on site to get it to a certain level of cleanliness before they can even send it to our wastewater facility before we do the final work to put it to state and federal standards. So it's my job as the mayor and a commissioner on the Wastewater Commission to make sure that Foxconn will have to meet or beat every federal, state, and local standard for clean water. And that's what we're going to do. Now, people are a little bit anxious about it. They're like, yeah, but what's going to be in it? Well, we won't know that for a couple of years until the facility is built and they put in what's called a discharge permit, where we'll begin to do that. But that's a place where listeners should be asking, well, what is that going to be? How transparent is it going to be? Those are all good questions. But for people who want those answers now, it might be a little bit frustrating because we're a couple years away before we know exactly what their process is going to look like.
Right. I suppose one of the things that is cause for confidence, or hope at least, is the fact that Foxconn has this history of being incredibly innovative, and that same sense of innovation can be brought to bear on every single facet of what they do, including this question of what they're going to do with their water.
Oh, I think that's right. And they're aware that there's public scrutiny around this, right? And I think they want to get this right as much as anybody else. So it's not as though – I've had no conversations where they've said, can you – you know, how hard is this going to be? Can – you know, is there something you can do to lighten the load on this? I mean, every conversation I've had with them is that they intend to meet every standard that's out there and want to potentially use some innovative ways to approach it. So I'm confident that – with the authority that we have with the city's wastewater utility, that we're going to do everything we need to do to protect Lake Michigan.
Right.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, a sense of responsibility that the city has, the county, the state, the federal government, to ensure all of those requirements are met, Foxconn's own personal integrity in order to make that happen. I mean, and I look at it in a very simplistic way. I mean, they're the ones that are going to live here as well, so I'm sure they want to take care of their water. I mean, you're not putting a $10 billion investment in to think it's going to go away in a year or two. So this is something that I think is essential to talk about and essential to have the right protocol in place, but it is also something that is a win for everyone, including the residents that will be working for Foxconn and Foxconn in general. I had an opportunity to see that, and many of our residents in Racine leadership in the plant in Osaka, Japan, in which they have extensive water treatment there as well. So this is a strategy long term because of the products that they make, that they've had a lot of research and development put into the water quality.
Very good. By the way, when you say, you know, the people I've talked to at Foxconn and so on, I'm just curious, how often are you talking to someone with Foxconn? I mean, is this a real frequent part of your agenda?
Yes. I think for a lot of people in the area, whether it's trying to figure out, you know, some of the development that may occur in the city, whether it's going on with water and wastewater, whether it's with transit, again, you know, Foxconn's arrival is a catalyst for all these conversations. So whether it's talking with them directly or talking with our municipal partners about transit or education or whatever it is, it's just a really exciting time. But their arrival takes up a big part of all the conversations we're having, because it's talking to them directly about what their plans are, but then it's talking to each other about, hey, what's Gateway's future look like in the region? What is our transit situation look like? How are we going to get people who live in the city out to the Foxconn facility? Do we have enough buses? What is that going to look like? So it takes up a lot of our time, but it's putting in place some of the infrastructure that we've needed for decades.
I want to give the mayor a lot of credit for helping keep us focused on the city as well. What can we do to make sure that the city residents have access to training? The mayor and the county executive brought forward this partnership with Big Step out of Milwaukee to advance pre-apprenticeship training programs and really helped advocate for the Uplift 900, which is their expanded GED initiatives. And all of those are proving to be very solid and beneficial training programs right downtown Racine, and giving people greater access through the existing bus routes to get the skills necessary to do the great work, whether it's building roads or building infrastructure for Foxconn or ultimately working in the plant.
Yeah, and I just want to echo this great partnership we've got with the city and the county and Gateway to bring the Big Step project right to Gateway's downtown campus. And, you know, it's this really exciting time. So everybody's talking about who will work at Foxconn when it's built, but, you know, we're reminding city residents and other buildings, they need 11,000 people just to build it, right? And so those are the jobs that are coming first. And so we've built this great partnership. And then this week, the county executive and I are doing town hall meetings where we're literally trying to recruit people neighborhood by neighborhood and letting them know about the opportunities that are available. And what's great is, you know, if you don't have the skills to be a journeyman carpenter on day one, and who does, right? I mean, what can you do? Well, you can enroll in programs like Big Step and then partner with their curriculum. And, you know, then maybe in a few months' time, you can be ready to apprentice with one of the trades and help build this great opportunity that's coming with Foxconn.
By the way, when it comes to this facility and what it will look like and how it will be constructed and again, kind of coming back to some of these environmental concerns, because the thing is huge, and a lot in terms of the impact it's going to have on our environment is going to have to do with the way this is constructed, the way things like drainage are kept in mind, and so on. Now, is that more of a Mount Pleasant thing?
It is. I mean, in terms of how they will navigate runoff and stormwater capture and some of the other things, that's really because the site is physically in Mount Pleasant. Those are permitting questions that will have to be addressed by the village of Mount Pleasant. People keep asking, what's it going to look like? Do you have a picture? Where is it? I mean, we just know it's going to be big, right? So the metrics of it are, you know, five times the size of the Pentagon, which is one of the biggest buildings in the United States of America. So when you think about it in those terms, just the amount of square footage is just, I mean, their campus will be bigger than the village of Sturtevant. I mean, just in terms of the scale of it. So it's, you know,
they're mind-boggling.
It is, but they're essentially going to build something the size of a decent-sized village in a pretty short period of time.
Right. And one wonders, is that going to be solid concrete, or are they going to be compelled to make this something?
Sure. I mean, they'll still have to address all the stormwater rules and all the other. I mean, they get some exemptions on wetland permitting, which, you know, I'm not thrilled about that they passed in the enabling legislation. But, look, they know that they're going to have to, I mean, just for their own functionality, if you don't address the water runoff, it's going to go somewhere.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, they're aware of that. But a number of people have asked, well, you know, do you know exactly where it'll look like or exactly where the first building will go? I mean, they're going to reveal that all in good time. But I think those are good questions for people to ask as they're getting ready to build it. What will it look like? What will runoff look like? But those are questions really that the DNR and the village of Mount Pleasant will be wrestling with.
Right. So people with concerns should be calling them and not you.
Well, I mean, they can call me. But, I mean, if their question is about giving them water or the wastewater they'll send back, I have jurisdiction there. If it's about, you know, what the retention ponds will look like in Mount Pleasant, I don't really have jurisdiction there.
Right. Probably too much to your relief. You have enough.
I have plenty to do.
I want to make sure that we have a chance for you to say a word about your mom, who has been mentioned already. And I know she's a big part of why you are the person you are. And she was recently recognized at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, where she has been such a valuable fixture for so many years. Tell our listeners about this award that was given to your mom.
Yeah, my mother was given a Distinguished Alumni Award, and a couple weeks before that, both of my parents were acknowledged at the Italian community fundraiser at the UW Parkside Foundation. I'm really blessed to stand on the shoulders of two parents who've been, you know, pillars in their own right in this community, and very much a product of them. My father was in the first full graduating class of UW Parkside when it opened, so he finished from start to finish there. Mm. Got a degree in philosophy, or I'm sorry, in chemistry and business. And at the time, S.C. Johnson had bought these payroll computers and couldn't figure out how to make them work. And so they went down to Parkside and said, can you find people with like a science background or something to get our computers to work? So this is long before IT even existed as a field. And so my father, with this chemistry degree, embarked on a now 40-year career in IT, first with SCJ and then with Harley and now at Twin Disc. And so, you know, when people say, well, where do you get sort of your planning side of you or this economic development excitement that you have, where does that come from? That's really from my father. And then my mother has spent decades working at UW Parkside and really taking on celebrating diversity and challenging us to think about privilege, and has made her work at Parkside as much a community position as a campus position, and really done a number of conversations around diversity, engaging people in tough conversations about equity and race, and that sort of conscience that she's helped me build really has defined who I am. And you know, when I'm talking about trying to build up the middle class and equity and access for everybody, and making sure that we're an inclusive community for everyone, that's from my mom. And so I'm so lucky to have them as parents, and they've definitely shaped who I am and my values and the things that I choose to work on, and just feel really blessed and lucky. And, you know, you sort of love your parents in a whole new way when you see them as grandparents to your children, right? And so I'm just – they're great pillars of the community. They're huge resources for me and my family, and I couldn't be more proud of them.
Well, I was very touched when I was at the awards presentation, and actually your mom had your daughter come up on stage with her, which was so cool to see that, and what a role model that must be for a young child to see her grandmother getting this award. And you know, it's just a really cool context, and what a great moment that was. And I just want to thank your whole family, Corey, because you've really opened up your lives, all of you, to creating a better and stronger Racine, and you do a lot of it through the educational pathways, whether it's at the university or at the K-12 level as well. And I guess my kind of question here would be like, so, I mean, what are the types of things that you're doing to kind of stay engaged with education, and how, in a mayor's role, can you advocate for more families and more children to have a similar type of experience?
Yeah, I should note, because my brother's a professor of genetics, and my sister's a K-12 teacher, my father's taught adjunct at Parkside, and my mom was there for, so I'm the only one in my family who's not an educator, so so maybe it's it comes naturally. You know, maybe people are like,
consider yourself part of the Gateway family,
right? There we go. But people are sort of like, well, what happened to you? I mean, how, you know, but really, I mean, education, I mean, there's, we could talk for a long time about what communities need, but really families need opportunity to good paying jobs, they need good health care, they need the opportunity to learn, and decent, affordable housing. And so you have to think about all those things. So the city itself isn't looking to start a school district or its own schools or anything like that. I mean, we've got great partners at Racine Unified and Gateway. But what I can do, because we know this more and more, is, you know, what really impacts a child's ability to learn is the poverty that they might be experiencing in the home. And so when I think about what the city can do that's most important to help K-12 kids succeed, it's not starting another program that might compete with what Racine Unified Schools are doing, but instead it's how can we partner with those schools to address the very real needs that those kids are experiencing either after school or before they get to school. Is it hunger? Is it poverty? Is it housing? And that's really where the city and the county, frankly, can partner together to get at the real human needs that people get to. I'm really excited about the work that Unified's done with United Way to start a community school at one of our NAP schools. And the idea really is there, look, let's address holistically the family situations that these students come from, and invite their parents in and help them figure out what challenges they have. And what they find is truancy is way down and grades are way up. And so when the city and its community centers really needs to figure out is how can we be more of an asset so that kids can succeed when they go to school. And it's not reinventing what the kids do while they're in the school, but lifting up those families when they're not in school so that those kids come to school ready to learn.
Right, and not bearing all of these burdens of a hardship that is part of their
life. I mean, just to give you an example, so Racine Unified has about 20,000 students, and about 1,000 of them will be homeless for summer part of the school year, right? I mean, when kids come to school, when you're trying to figure out, well, why aren't they sitting and being more attentive, and, well, maybe because they don't know where they're going to go. go that night. Or maybe they've been sleeping on grandma's couch and then an aunt's couch. And, you know, and so there are very real concerns that kids come to school with. And again, we need to do everything we can to help the school district educate those kids. But as a community, we all need to wrap our arms around these children who are going to be our future workforce and members of our community, and make sure that what are the gaps that they have in their lives so that they're having a harder time succeed. Because we need all of our kids to learn, and it's going to take all of us working together to make that happen.
Hmm. On that note of conviction and commitment for the